This is F1 Debrief. It was an impressive display of 10-pin bowling. Coming up on this show, we talk about advanced parties, dogs on track, heads-up displays, and a really big shelf. I have a feeling this might be something of a short show.
I cannot believe you are dragging me out of my sickbed to record this. I'm not a well man.
Yeah, you've got the man flu, haven't you?
I'm dying here.
But we're also battling against the odd firework here and there because it was bonfire night in the UK yesterday and people don't seem to realise it was yesterday and are still letting off the old fireworks.
Happens every single year.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Mike Coughlan, who has been promoted to technical director at Williams. I'll be honest, I thought he already was that in place for when Sam Michael left, but I suppose if he's just been promoted, that was not the case. Also, we found out that Sam Michael will be at McLaren for the last two races of the year. He's been let out of his Williams contract early.
Ted Kravitz on the BBC noted that Mike Coughlan will be attending races next year. Now, we did not think that would be the case, but Mike is going to be seen in and around the paddock. That'll be interesting.
It's been a bad week for Metallica fans as their appearance at the F1 Rocks concert was cancelled after the crowd pushed too hard against the barriers and bust them. Metallica rescheduled for the second night, but after a stage invasion from angry fans, it all had to be cancelled.
F1 Rocks was going so well. Big fan of F1 Rocks. In previous events, everything has been carried off without a hitch. In this instance, it all went very, very wrong. It was a terrible week for Metallica fans.
I think Lady Gaga went on and did her thing, but that probably didn't appease them any.
It was the Metallica fans?
Yeah.
No, it was a smaller setup and it was far better organised.
It's been a good week for Formula One fans as the Lotus name change thing has been put to rest. The FIA commission approved that Renaults can now be known as Lotus. Lotus can now be known as Caterham and Virgin can be Marussia as well. Sorted.
So long as we remember all of that, maybe we need a post-it.
It's been a bad week for Pirelli after Paul Hembry was beaten by Sebastian Vettel in a tyre fitting challenge. Vettel took 5 minutes 13, whereas Hembry took 5 minutes 44. But there's talk of cheating as Vettel won by not putting enough pressure into his tyre. For winning, Vettel was given a single 50% scale wind tunnel tyre.
And what is he going to do with that?
Put it on a shelf.
A big shelf?
Before we even got to qualifying, there were some weird things going on because it was a new circuit and some bits weren't ready and some bits were just a culture shock.
It wasn't as rushed as Korea was last year, though. It felt slightly more organised.
No. I know that Williams, they sent an advance party to eat the food because they were a bit worried about whether they might get sick.
I heard a rumour that you were volunteering for that job next year.
Well,
Austin. Any Formula One teams listening would like to send Christine out to test all the food in any hotel in Austin just to make sure it's okay for consumption. I'm sure you'll be happy to do that.
Seeing as it's free food and they didn't get sick, I'm happy to take that job. That's fine. Also, when Williams arrived at the circuit, they found out that a family had moved into their hospitality area, which is a bit weird.
Well, it shows how nice it is.
Set up camp in there. Kovalainen, he tweeted that he saw a car going the wrong way down the motorway and his driver said, oh no, that's fine, he's just going back to the city, as though that explains it.
Perfectly normal.
Yeah. And also, I think there was a problem with traffic leaving the circuit because they were meant to be on a dual carriageway, but it was only single lane because a tractor was coming the wrong way.
Okay, so the dual carriageway was less dual, more single.
Yeah. A Force India forklift truck got stuck in wet cement outside the garage because it just wasn't dry, wasn't ready.
Someone's going to have a lot of fun cleaning that up.
Yeah. And there was also talk of a staircase, I think, in the paddock somewhere that just went nowhere.
Well, it did. If you walked up it, you'd drop off the edge of the building and land a couple of floors down. It went somewhere. It just wasn't anywhere useful.
And, of course, there was a dog on the circuit for free practice.
Shades of Turkey. Formula One's experienced that in the past. There were three instances, I think, on Friday. We only saw one. But after that, there were no more troubles. So they sorted that problem out.
It caused a red flag briefly for the first practice. But yeah, that was it. Along with dogs on track, FP1 was a bit mental, really.
I loved FP1.
Drivers were just trying to find the limit, spinning off all over the place. Jaime Alguersuari crashed into the barriers. But I forgive him because he has a pink helmet on. And that's just like Frank. I haven't mentioned Frank for ages.
He hasn't made it to Side Podcast in a long time. I'll tell you what I liked about FP1 is because it was a new circuit, so many people turned up. It was on in the small hours of the morning in the UK. But Side Podcast was very busy with live comment and chat because people were interested to see how the circuit was panning out.
Fernando Alonso had a suspected engine problem. Pastor Maldonado also had engine issues.
It went boom.
We're really starting to see the tail end of the engine reliability now.
The thing with the Williams engine in free practice was that it had come to the end of its natural life expectancy, so that was fine. However, the problem that Pastor suffered in the race has caused him to require an engine change for Abu Dhabi, and that's going to set him back 10 places.
Yeah, he's the first driver this year to take that 10-place grid drop, which, gosh, it's a long way, isn't it?
It is. It's a massive amount of places, although Pastor's unlikely to finish above 14th, so it's going to be less for him.
Talking of penalties, I mean, they were all over the place. There were penalties galore throughout the Indian GP weekend, starting with the fact that I went to sleep on Friday thinking that Jenson Button was going to get a penalty for yellow flag issues, and it turns out it was Hamilton and Perez.
Yes. Yeah, that's the way, that's how it's working out at McLaren right now. Jenson Button looked like he passed a car under yellow flags, but his argument was Naren Kartikeyan was growing incredibly slowly. Dangerously slowly, I think, was his point. So he was fine for that, but I think Lewis Hamilton was seen with his DRS wide open under a waved yellow, whilst I think the digi flags were green. So there is controversy again surrounding that incident. But what did he pick up? A 3-place drop for that, as did Perez.
Second practice was a lot quieter. I think just, I mean, there were a few wobbles throughout, but Jerome D'Ambrosio went backwards into the barriers, and that was the biggest incident. I must admit, I didn't see the third practice, but then I tend not to do that anymore. It's not the most interesting session that there ever is, and that leads us on to qualifying. The first session was pretty good, seeing who would be the one to drop out with the new teams. Schumacher seemed to be really struggling for pace. There were points when it looked like he might be that one dropping out in 18th place.
Q1 was very exciting. It was the most exciting part of qualifying for me. A lot of action, a lot going on, a lot to see, and there was drama right to the very end.
Timo Glock had some issues. He had to sit out half the session due to gearbox trouble. He did manage to set a time, but it was outside the 107% thing. And lots of people were like, oh, is Christine going to rant about that on the show? No.
You don't care anymore.
Well, firstly, I've said my piece about the 107% thing, and it's not going to change this year, so that doesn't matter.
I can't believe nobody in Formula One management listened to you.
And also, I can understand if he did set a time and he clearly couldn't go out again and the track was getting a lot quicker and he had mechanical issues, so that I can understand. It's when they let people in who didn't bother saying
it. Slow.
Yeah, exactly. Q2 was pretty dull, and Q3 was also dull, mostly because Massa crashed out. He bounced over the curbs and broke his suspension, which sent him careering into the barriers. That meant that there were yellow flags. No one could set a faster time than, guess who?
Sebastian Vettel.
That would be the one. So another pole position for Red Bull, and some work to do for the Ferrari boys.
We haven't talked about the controversy that was Felipe Massa's fluttering front wing. Now, you saw this, I don't know if you saw this live, but when you watched the replays, what was your immediate reaction on seeing a wing do what Felipe Massa's did?
I didn't know that they were running a new wing, and I just saw a brief glimpse of it, and I assumed he was broken.
Yes, it did. It looked unsafe, would be the best way of describing that wing. Both end plates were scraping along the ground, causing all sorts of sparks, and there was a rocking motion from left to right.
I can't believe it's meant to do that.
No, Ferrari didn't understand why it was doing it. According to them, they didn't do anything different with the wing. They didn't understand what was causing it. We've had flexi wing controversies for 2 years now, maybe more in Formula One. That is the most flexible Formula One part I've ever seen attached to a car, that stayed attached to the car.
Force India were into the top 10, and you'll never guess, but a Force India car almost managed to set a time.
Almost?
In the top 10 session, but they didn't.
It didn't set a flying lap, it just went out and they put in a, whatever you'd call it, a sighter lap? Maybe they've made a token effort.
Yep, also to
at their home Grand Prix as well.
Yeah.
You're called Force India, you're in India, you have a grandstand packed full of Indian fans, you can't even be bothered to run a flying lap in those situations.
Two Toro Rosso drivers, similarly, into the top 10. They haven't both been in there since, I think, China.
That was a great run in qualifying from both Toro Rosso drivers. And I love them. We'll talk about them in the race in a minute. I love what they were doing in the race too.
There were 5 penalties in total. We've talked of Hamilton and Perez. Daniel Ricciardo had a 5-place grid drop for a gearbox thing, but obviously he was somewhere near the back anyway. Petrov was dropped down the order for his crash with Schumacher in Korea. And Naren Kartikeyan was penalised for impeding Schumacher in qualifying, but also he was naturally somewhere near the back.
It made no difference giving the guy the penalty. He continued to do that for the entire duration of the race. That's all he did all weekend. The home hero was a moving roadblock for 3 whole days.
The race.
Hello, Stephen Roy here. I think the race itself, the event rather, was great atmosphere and great to see the locals really taking an interest straight from the start. because they're so used to going to these places where no one's interested and all they can show is empty grandstands. But to actually see marshals there who recognise drivers and so on, absolutely fantastic. The track's a disappointment, huge, huge disappointment. The drivers seem to enjoy driving it, but it's not going to be great for racing, and I don't think cleaning it up will make the slightest bit of difference. The bit with two long straights on it is fine, but the other section with all the single line corners following each other, it's a disaster again. And on the subject of Telka, why can that man not design a safe pit lane entry and exit? Pit lane exit in India, it's a disaster again. It's right on the racing line. You got a brand new circuit, huge long straights. All you got to do is put the pits at the start of the straight, exit on the middle of the pit exit on the middle of the straight on the opposite side to where the racing line is. They must have been to Monza. They've been doing it there for donkey's years. Why not copy that rather than copy his own nonsense?
So in conclusion, Herman Tilke makes a mean straight. But everything else,
linking
not so
them
great.
Together, that's the tricky bit.
Formula One drivers were unanimous in their praise for what Tilke had done in India. I think many of them described it as his best effort. Now, that's a low bar to aim for, as we know with Herman Tilke. But I don't think it was quite as bad as Stephen is making out. There is potential in that circuit to be as good as somewhere like Turkey. I like the layout of it. I think it worked well and the drivers enjoyed driving it.
I do think it was built up a little bit too much though, because everyone was saying what a great and interesting circuit it was going to be. And actually the race itself was not very good.
No, it didn't make for great racing. Granted, the thing that I took away from this weekend that hasn't appeared to happen in my recent recollection is that everybody who went to India, everybody who went to the Grand Prix, loved the atmosphere that they found there. The drivers, the team personnel, the media people, journalists, everybody involved in Formula One who went to India got caught up in the wonder and the excitement of being in this fantastic country. But us fans at home were very much removed from that. And so anybody who went to India had a great time, and anybody who watched at home thought it was a pretty dull race. And there's a dividing line between what people thought, you know, people who were there and what they thought, and people who watched it on television and what we thought. And that's never been quite as clear cut, I don't think, in any other race. The atmosphere and being there just never translated through our television screens.
Yeah, I don't know why that would be. I mean, part of the reason the race was not so interesting is because Vettel led the whole way. But then he's done that a lot this year and it hasn't always been like that. Behind him, there were a few things to keep an eye on. For instance, the first lap, first corner, it was Barrichello doing a bit of a Liuzzi.
A bit of a Liuzzi?
Well, it wasn't...
He copied him and then pushed it even farther, didn't he?
It wasn't quite so pronounced. Liuzzi took out quite a few cars in one
so
go.
So did Barrichello.
He managed
it was
to,
an impressive display of 10-pin bowling.
He managed to do a bit more of a domino thing.
Yes. Rubens Barrichello, domino pusher. It's very hard to defend Rubens Barrichello. I like the guy. I think he's done great things for Formula 1. It's great to have him in Formula 1. But the very tail end of his career is becoming very much like the tail end of David Coulthard's career, where every race he ends up crashing into more and more people and ruining more and more races. And Barrichello, within the space of 400 metres of the lights going green, managed to wreck his race. He hit his teammate and potentially wrecked, put him out of the race. He took Kamui Kobayashi off and who was the fourth?
Glock driver, as well.
And Timo Glock, he wrecked his race as well. So there was four race-ending collisions in the space of one corner from one man, and now might be the time to retire Rubens Barrichello.
Afterwards, he said, I lost my nose going into the first corner.
Lost his mind going into the first corner.
Had to come in for an unscheduled stop. That ruined my race from the outset.
And everybody else's at the back.
Williams said they didn't know what the cause for their gearbox trouble on Maldonado's car was. Rubens?
Rubens smashed into the back of it.
Timo Glock pitted twice and he eventually had to call it a day. His car was beyond repair.
It was barricaded.
Meanwhile, Webber did not have a good start. He's regressed again and Button managed to pass him to get up into second place pretty much straight away.
It was pointed out to me on Twitter. I should keep a record of these names, but you know how tweets just fly by. But if you watch back the replay of Button passing Webber, Webber is in a very strange position, the kind of position you would want to be in if you wanted to be passed, not the kind of position you put your car in if you were making any attempt to defend. He was well offline, and so I don't know quite what he was doing there.
Alonso also managed to get past Webber before the end, so he was the third guy on the podium. Elsewhere, Sebastian Buemi's Toro Rosso ended up a bit of a smoky mess.
This time had nothing to do with Rubens Barrichello. However, I did like the Toro Rossos chasing each other around the track. It was like Scale Xtric. Every time the lead Toro Rosso passed a car, the following Toro Rosso passed it, and then they carried on along their way. It was Jaime was just in front of Buemi. The car seemed to have equal pace, and both drivers seemed to be driving equally well.
Their good results this week put them on equal points with Sauber now, and that's where the big championship battle is happening in the constructors between Sauber, Toro Rosso, Force India.
It's almost the only thing worth watching.
The trouble is, Sauber could find themselves falling back to eighth now.
That's considering how well their season went. If you discount the first race when they were disqualified, Sauber's start was impeccable. They put in a great series of races. Kamui Kobayashi has not been doing so well, though. I think he's letting the team down, and Perez has definitely got the legs on him. Did Perez end up getting a point in this race? He ended up 10th, didn't he?
Yeah.
He got the last points playing position. Kamui Kobayashi obviously was taken out at the start. Wasn't his fault, but it's another race with no points for Kamui.
Talking of drivers taking each other out, I think this is the point where we talk about Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa.
I haven't spent a whole week discussing this very incident on Side Podcast in the comments. I haven't posted nearly 100 comments on this discussion, and I haven't already talked myself out of every possible angle of conversation. That hasn't happened. That's not been the story of my week.
Well, then I haven't spent all week avoiding Side Podcast to avoid the conversation.
Yes, we do have a voicemail on this very subject, though. Play it.
Hello, Side Podcast. It's Tom here from Glasgow, a.k.a. Mad for F1, that's my Twitter handle. Just a little call to carry on our little debate we were having on Twitter. My view, basically, I side with the stewards. It was clear as day that Massa knew Hamilton was trying to pass. He made a mistake earlier on in the lap, which put him under pressure, and he defended his position much, much too hard, in my opinion. He knew Hamilton was there. Okay, Hamilton backed out slightly, but he still chopped across the front of Hamilton's car. Clear as day. He looked in these mirrors 3 or 4 times, and he knew he was there. Anyway, just a couple of shout-outs. I'd like to thank the organisers of the Indian Grand Prix. Fantastic event. Absolutely fantastic. And also a shout-out to yourselves at Side Podcast. Thank you very much for all your hard work and effort. And yes, I will click on and make a donation just as soon as my lottery win comes in. Okay, thanks again. Bye.
As well as spending the week discussing this on Side Podcast, I've also spent the week discussing it on Twitter and on Facebook and on Google+. So there has been opinions flying left, right and centre. Firstly, I must say thank you to Felipe Massa and Lewis Hamilton for giving us something to talk about this weekend, and for giving us something to talk about in the dying stages of this season, because really there isn't much going on, and it's good to get to have something, you know, to get Formula One fans up in arms about something. Now,
some Formula One fans, some stubborn Formula One fans.
It's nice to have a discussion. Anyway, there have been disagreements
day after day.
There is no right and there is no wrong in this incident. It's the first time this year that I have been mortified at a steward's decision. I think when you're doing the Fact by Fact box, sometimes we make a call and we'll say, this is, you know, this happened in the steward's mugger this way or whatever. This time, I thought it was a racing incident, no penalty. And the stewards, one of which was Johnny Herbert, decided that Felipe Massa deserved a penalty. I don't think that was correct. Martin Brundle, an ex-driver, and David Coulthard, an ex-driver, in the commentary box on BBC One, also thought that was a bad call. But on Radio 5 Live, ex-Formula 1 driver Anthony Davidson thought it was a good call. So if you've got ex-Formula 1 drivers disagreeing on whether or not it was the right or the wrong call, I think it's too close to call for a penalty. Because, you know, one driver saying, that's fine, that's perfectly normal. Another driver saying, that's completely outrageous. If it's that fine, a judgment call, it's not the kind of thing you can give a penalty for. And Herbert tried to defend himself following in the days following the race, and didn't shed any new light on it. He just said he looked at the footage and made his call. He had no more data than we had, and he has no more experience than Martin Brundle, David Coulthard, maybe a bit more than Anthony Davidson, but not much.
Lots and lots of people disagree with you. I think the majority seem to be that the Massa penalty was the right thing to do, or at least Massa penalty or no penalty. That seems to be the majority of opinion that I've seen. One thing I did think was weird, that a lot of people are saying he definitely looked in his mirror. And I thought people couldn't see anything in their mirrors. And also, how do you know that he saw him? He could have been looking at his tyre. He could have been looking at the curb, because we know he has curb issues.
That was one of the reasons that Johnny Herbert gave for making the decision that he made. He watched the replay footage and he says he can see Felipe Massa looking in his wing mirrors. Now, he's a better man than me. If you can see a driver's eyeball through their visor and you can tell what they're looking at, and not only what they're looking at, but if they're looking in a mirror and what they can see in that wing mirror. Lewis Hamilton, was it the last race or the race before? He argued that the wing mirrors vibrate too much and you can't see anything out of them anyway. So to me, it was a bad stewarding call, made worse by a bad defense of the stewarding call from Johnny Herbert. On the plus side, at least it was a steward who came out and said, we made this decision for this reason, because the official FIA press release, the PDF they put up on the site afterwards, told us absolutely nothing useful at all, as ever is the case.
More transparency is always a good thing.
It is a good thing. I still don't agree with the decision, and I don't agree with Herbert. But that's fair, you know. It's one of those things. It's nice to have these discussions. It's nice to to trade off different people's opinions and see where the opinion falls.
I did have a message from Shane, who put another spin on the Massa Hamilton thing. He said, another race, another coming together between Massa and Hamilton. That they keep coming together could say more about Massa than people realise. Everyone talks about how fast Lewis is, and he is, but if he and Massa keep racing each other, doesn't that mean that Massa is as fast as Lewis? And given that the Ferrari isn't as fast as the McLaren, that could mean that Massa is driving really well. Just a thought. Keep up the good work. Shane in New York.
Interesting. That's a fine point.
It is a good point. I mean, for Massa to be keeping up with him is good. I think that Hamilton has been out of place quite a lot.
Well, he had a three-place grid drop, which put him down where he was. The McLaren, even before the incident with Massa, Hamilton was looking off the pace. He was struggling in comparison to Jenson Button. There may be other issues going on. We don't know what those problems might be. Jenson was hooked up all weekend. He was on it. It's a shame that he couldn't take the fight to Sebastian, but it looked like it was his weekend. Lewis was out of sorts regardless of the penalty. He was just out of sorts in the position he was in. I don't think Massa's doing a bad job. We've seen how off the pace Webber can be when a driver struggles with the tyres. And so, Shane has a very good point.
However, in this race, Massa did end up retiring because he repeated his qualifying incident. It was practically a carbon copy.
It was an exact mirror of the qualifying accident. This time he hit the opposite wheel on a large curb, and that crucified his suspension. That was the end of his race.
The other championship battle that is interesting is between the new teams, and Lotus are sitting 10th. There seems to be a lot of tense people around, hoping, crossing their fingers, that Lotus can remain 10th, which I get because it is important. It's a lot of money. It's worth a lot to them. But I can't see anything else happening. They're so far ahead of the other two teams. What else could happen?
Because last year's results and last year's 10th place finish counts, and you need to get the two 10th place finishes or above in a row. If Lotus lose this year's 10th place in the last two races, it means the whole of the last 2 years' worth of work will be thrown out of the window. And that would be heartbreaking, but also quite amusing. And so I can see why people are so desperately worried. Nobody wants to throw this chance, this opportunity to move up into the next category of income and revenue away. They don't want to take that chance. And that's why, understandably, Karun Chandhok didn't get to drive in his home Grand Prix.
No, Trulli was, he held on to his seat, but he finished last. And you just think, well, would Karun have done any worse?
Could he have done any worse? No.
Not really.
No.
At one point, Heikki Kovalainen was up in 10th, though, which was amazing. Imagine if he'd got a point.
Fantastic. They are finally showing the pace that we expected them to show at the beginning of the year. This is where Heikki should have been fighting all season.
I think it was a pit stop timing thing that saw him up in 10th, but he settled in 12th for a while and ultimately finished 14th, which isn't so good. But they are moving forward, and I think they haven't got anything to worry about. Earlier you said that Carter Kane was a moving roadblock, but teammate Daniel Ricciardo managed to finish behind him, even though Narain hasn't raced since the European GP.
That's
embarrassing.
I hadn't appreciated that.
Daniel's the wonder kid.
he's not so wonderful now. That's awful. How did that happen? I hadn't paid that much attention to his race, to be honest with you. Do we have a Daniel's Day out?
Well, yes, we do. Would you like to hear it?
Go on. I'd love to know what happened to his race.
Disappointing.
I'm not sure Davin has actually got the point of this one-word thing completely, because every week he sends, every race, he sends a clarification, you know, a little paragraph to go with it, which is not quite one word.
It's handy, though, if we're not paying any attention to what he's doing.
I'll read it anyway. It says, unless HRT instituted team orders in India, which would be the most depressing thing that I have ever heard, I cannot help but be slightly disappointed with Daniel's results against Narain in India. The sad part was that his finishing performance had more to do with his team's poor pit stop skills than it did with Danny's driving. So I'm not disappointed in Danny, I'm disappointed in HRT. Although, I'm always disappointed in HRT.
I still don't think Danny is going to get a Toro Rosso seat next year. I don't think he's done anywhere near enough in the time he's had in that car.
And the other two, they're not disappointing at the moment, are they? So while we're doing our rookie reports, I think then we'll have to turn to Paul de Resta.
Horrible.
Considering that Force India are still in that battle with Sauber and Toro Rosso, although they probably don't fear quite so much from Sauber as they did before, Sutil is the one picking up the point this race, and not Paul de Resta, so that is a bit awkward.
That was the worst execution of any race strategy I think I've ever seen. Both de Resta and Perez were on the same, effectively the same pit stop strategy throughout the race.
Petrov as well.
And, well, the thing with de Resta and Perez is they were both back in the same positions after their first stops, so yeah. They were chasing each other, you know, they were hunting in the pack at the beginning of the race, yet Perez managed to make it work, and de Resta couldn't make his tyre strategy work for him in the slightest.
I mean, they're only four places apart, but it's the difference between a point and no points.
Mm-hmm.
Stand by my reasoning that you give a kid a crayon and some paper and tell them to go nuts for it, you get a brilliant circuit. Well done, India. Thank you for a brilliant race, even if it was, you know, mostly professional. But hey, at least it showed up Felipe Massa's shortcomings. See ya.
Thanks for the voicemail, Turkey Machine. If anyone wants to send voicemails, the number is 012128TRACK. That's 012128-87225. I do wonder how it can be a brilliant race, even if it was processional.
It wasn't a brilliant race.
No.
Not by any measure. The first corner and one incident were good. The rest of it, nothing memorable.
No, but it's time for us to rate the race. And as the race was a week ago, you're going to have to remember it.
I can't remember things that didn't happen. And therefore, it's easy to rate this one. I'm going to give the race a 4, which might be the lowest mark I've given any race this year. The problem is, it didn't have any redeeming features for fans at home watching their TV on their sofa. I'm sure the atmosphere was fantastic. It was nice to see some grandstands with some people in them. It was nice to see a Tilke circuit that at least the drivers didn't despise, and there was elevation change throughout the course. But in the end, it didn't produce a fantastic race, and in the end, it was one of the most forgettable of the season.
I think I'm going to join you, rating it a 4. It was a good first half. But then it was such a dull second half that it sort of wiped out all the good stuff from the beginning. But, I mean, there were some incidents to note. Obviously, we've talked about the race, so there was something happening in there. But, I don't know, it was similar to Korea, nothing special. I must say, I think we're being generous, because some of the scores, we put the post up asking people to rate the race and pick their driver of the day. Some of those scores are very, very low.
Yeah, I saw a 2 something in there.
It's not a favourite.
No, it is not going to go down as a Formula One classic circuit. Certainly not at the moment, not without changes.
So who was your driver of the day?
Driver of the day is a tough one, because Sebastian Vettel is the only guy in the running. But I don't want to give it to him again. He's got the fastest car. He started from pole. He's got everything already. Good God, he just makes it look too easy. I'm going to have to give it to Heikki Kovalainen. I thought that was a fine, fine effort when there's so much pressure on the team. And there are so many people with their fingers crossed in Team Lotus right now. He can't put a foot wrong. And if he does put a foot wrong, the guy's going to be so much grief. They're relying on him. It's a one-person team, Team Lotus, right now. Heikki is that one person. He didn't let them down. I think he had a great drive, and it was a great day.
Who is sandwiched between Paul de Resta and Rubens Barrichello, which is not really a bad place to be, is it?
Being anywhere near Rubens Barrichello could be considered a bad place to be.
Oh yeah, good point. My driver of the day is, I think I've given him driver of the day quite a few times already this season. But Jaime Alguersuari, because he did a good job. He stuck with his teammate until Buemi retired. He got up into the points, and of course, he had a helmet like Frank.
We was robbed.
You rate your circuits on buildings. I rate my drivers on pink helmets.
Fine.
Whatever.
We was robbed of what might have been the most interesting battle of the race when Buemi pulled off the side of the track. And that was a shame, because that was hotting up to be something exciting.
A while back, I had a message from Samantha, who said, young Christine and Mr. C, listening to the latest SPC, I wonder whether there might be a slot in future podcasts for undistinguished performance, a sort of undriver of the day. Keep up the brilliantness, Samantha in sunny Skegness.
That almost sounds a slightly negative.
Well, the trouble is, you and I disagree on what undriver of the day should be, whether it's someone who was invisible, and therefore you just didn't see them, you don't really know what they did.
Daniel Ricciardo.
Or whether they were just completely rubbish, because obviously rubbish is going to be Barrichello.
And invisible is going to be Ricciardo. Yeah. So which is it going to be? Who is your own driver of the day?
One of those two. I'm not going to pick. Maybe they can share it.
I don't think you need to highlight somebody for being invisible. I think it should be the failure of the race. And that honour goes to Mr. Rubens Barrichello. Of that, there is no question. One final thing to mention, the Rate the Races, we're doing this with the help of Tony and his magnificent charts. So a big shout out for Tony, because I can see instantly, he's put together a fantastic PDF aggregating how a driver's race went from qualifying to how many positions they've gained. It's incredibly useful. We use it every single podcast. So thank you to Tony for that.
And we will link to it in the show notes. Feedback. Rolando sent in a message, I think is in response to the Hamilton and Massa thing, but I thought I'd push it back to feedback because it's an idea rather than a comment on that particular incident. He said, I just finished the Indian GP. I wanted to get your thoughts on heads-up displays inside the helmet visor. I know to some degree it would be seen as a distraction, but the one particular thing I thought would be worth it to try is a rear-view panoramic camera or a peripheral lighting system. Either you can see the actual car behind or alongside, similar to the rear view in a car, or you can have a series of coloured lights. So if there is a Ferrari alongside, you will see a red flash or pulse, depending on how close they are. I don't know how good or terrible this idea is. I'm sure the engineers would have a better go than I would myself. These cars do have blind spots, and I think it would help to fill in that blank to know when you have someone in that spot. I expected a little more from this race. Perhaps it would have been better on the tyres from earlier in the season. And that's from Rolando.
On the subject of tyres, Paul Hembree admitted that I think they made the wrong choice. The hard tyre was too hard. Did he say that it could have gone for three races by itself? It's rock solid, and it's going to be changed for next year. So that
three race tyres would just be amazing.
Yes. Can you imagine flat spotting that on race one? That would give you a lot of pain before the end of race three. Heads-up displays, Michael Schumacher looked into it. He trialled the very system. He wanted the same thing that fighter pilots use inside their cockpits when they're doing their aerial manoeuvres. And for whatever reason, I don't think he went ahead with it. Maybe it was too early into the experimentation. It might be worth having a look at again. If, say, Formula One was going down the route of closed cockpits, you could have heads-up display within the cockpit rather than within the visor. And to me, that would make a lot more sense. But then you have to convince people that closed cockpits are a good idea, and that's a whole other debate.
Let's not get into
that. I've argued enough this week.
In response to the last show where we were talking about the pit lane in Korea and where it comes out on the track, Nick actually came up with something we might have missed. He said, the fundamental problem is the pit lane is on the outside of the track rather than the inside, as it is at every other track apart from Yas Marina. The only real way to solve the issue is to have the pit lane go under the track via a tunnel. A lot of people think the tunnel at Yas is a bit of a gimmick, but it is there to avoid the precise problem they have in Korea.
So what they have to do is move the whole pit lane. That's a heck of an engineering job for a country that didn't manage to empty its own bins.
Next up, Chris has some thoughts on circuits. He says, hello, Mrs. Christine and Mr. C. I'm catching up and just wanted to send a quick compare and contrast note regarding Korea and India. I simply cannot stand the Korea track. It annoys me. Writing from the United States, I have been elated by the news of the New Jersey street race. I have feared that our new Tilka track in Austin might continue the trend towards throwing a dozen classic track features into a bag, giving it a shake, and then pulling out various features to then lay out the track. In the case of Korea, someone clearly forgot to shake the bag and the curves got stuck in the bottom. All seem randomly placed in the last sectors with no rhyme, reason, or, one could argue, beauty. India has restored my faith, however. There is elevation change, turns which require timing and rhythm, and the track just seems to hang together well as a whole. Yes, there is the pit exit, which throws slow cars directly into the path of oncoming traffic, and there appears to be a perennial dust or dirt storm over the whole thing, but otherwise the track just falls together much better. I have a thought. The BBC feed noted that the driver safety group provided input into the Buddha circuit, and that this resulted in things such as the wider entry into several of the turns. Does anyone else wish to join me in speculation that the drivers too are tired of the tilkization of the sport and have helped make a track which is simply more fun to drive? Just a thought. Thanks so much and keep up the excellent work. Cheers, Chris.
They might well have, and if they have, they achieved their aims. Whether or not the wider entry into corners is going to make much difference is very hard to tell. The way the Pirellis eat their rubber and deposit it off the racing line, it means no matter how wide your track is, you're always going to end up with one ideal line, and that reduces the chances of overtaking. So unless you alter the Pirelli tyres to reduce the amount of rubber and marbles deposited offline, it doesn't matter how wide your track is. It's never going to save the layout. But time will tell. We'll see whether next year they might clean it. They might manage to make sure that the dust is reduced. I do believe that some of the pit lane personnel were choking during the race and unable to speak due to the amount of dust that was being spread around. And I think during free practice one, we saw Karun Chandak almost manage to pull a 180 from a standing start because he floored the accelerator and there was no grip and the back end went straight around on him. There was that much dust in the pit lane. That must be solved for next year. They're definitely going to have to send in the street cleaners and hopefully manage to reduce it.
From circuits to the calendar, this is from another Chris who says, Christine and Mr. C, the calendar, 19 races this year, 20 in 2012 with the addition of Austin, 21 in 2013 with the addition of New York, New Jersey, and 22 in 2014 with the addition of Russia to the calendar. Team bosses have already said, from what I can tell, Whitmarsh and Boullier are the most vocal about it, that the teams will not agree to more than 20 races in a season, but Bernie has already inked these deals, so something has to give. Either we'll be losing venues, which would make me sad, or Bernie will once again strong-arm the teams into doing what he wants. While I would love to see F1 all year round, as we all would. No, we all wouldn't. 22 races is a bit much for the teams unless they have rotating crews like they do in NASCAR. Very expensive, don't you know? Here's my solution. Bernie, stop signing 10-year deals. It's that simple. Sure, 10 years is appropriate for the races that will never disappear from the calendar, like Monaco and Monza, but otherwise it just seems mad. Make countries and promoters compete for races. If deals were only for 2 to 3, dare I say 1 year, it would, 1, allow the calendar to stay at 20 races, 2, benefit the teams and fans because promoters would have to compete, which means better facilities. 3, bring back some circuits and venues that we all miss, France, Mexico, Argentina. And 4, provide a new and interesting season every year. That's just my 2 cents. Sure, this does have its downsides, but I think it could bring about a mutually agreeable solution and maybe a more interesting season for us fans. All the best, Chris.
The issue with short-term deals is you can't get the funding to build the circuit without a long-term deal. So, potentially, with every new circuit that comes on board, you need a 7 to 10 year agreement.
Well, like Silverstone and their 17-year deal.
Yes, in order to secure the backing required, you need those kind of long-term deals. But what you could say is that once a circuit's initial deal is expired, the first 10-year deal, after that, then it's 1 year, 2 year rolling contracts. I think probably what's going to happen in terms of the length of the calendar is that circuits are going to alternate in the same way that Spa and France are reported to be doing, because that's the only way you can keep so many circuits in rotation. This season has gone on way too long. I don't want to see Formula One continue throughout the whole year. I wish it was over now, really. This is far too long, and there's 2 races too many, and isn't it over yet?
I think there's still room for races to fall off the calendar. I mean, we know that Korea are already... they've only held 2 Grand Prix and they're already saying, not really sure this is for us. So I think there's still room for other ones to drop off.
Yes, but well, we've seen Turkey go. And the FIA, I believe, this week agreed or sanctioned, ratified, whatever the terminology is, for next year's calendar. And they've kept Bahrain on it, which is, it's going to be a world of hurt when that comes around again. And so... you know, there are more that could fall off the calendar. I am not looking forward to 20 races next year, but that's the way that Bernie wants it to be.
We always get good feedback, but I think those few messages were really, really good. I love the ideas and insightful thoughts into how Formula One should or could be.
It's more good ideas, people. If you have ideas in your head, throw them at us. Let us know.
Yeah, you can email me, christine@sidepodcast.com. You can leave a voicemail, as I mentioned earlier, 01212887225, or you can drop us a message via the contact form, which is at sidepodcast.com/about.
Don't beat a sick man when he's down.
I didn't say anything.
I saw you looking at me.
Housekeeping. The only bit of housekeeping we've got is actually another review for my 365 F1 Stories book. And usually you'll do this to make me embarrassed, but you've got a sore throat and you don't want to do too much talking. So actually I've got to say it out loud.
But it's you have to read out your own review in an awkward way.
Yeah, so I sound really big-headed, but it's...
That's my fault.
It's from Jeff in America. He said, if you're not a fan of F1, this book is most likely not for you. Which I think is probably a given from the title. But if you are and want to know some nuggets of F1 history, this book is for you. I'm a fan of F1, so I enjoyed reading it and learning about the history of F1.
And is that your first F1 365 review from the States? Follows hotly on the heels of the Formula Primo review we had last year.
Yeah, so it's picking up in America now.
If you're reading the book in the States, do leave Christine a review on Amazon.com or iTunes.com because I do like to read them out when I can.
I think that's probably it for this show.
I survived.
Next week is the race in Abu Dhabi.
Oh, dear. You know what I'm hoping for in Abu Dhabi? I'm banking on Lewis Hamilton and Felipe Massa coming together in the race just one more time. Do it for us, boys. You know you can lighten up our day.
You're a bit weird. I think
it's the only thing that ever happens.
Even the people that really like controversy, apart from you, it seems, they're just like, no, not those two. Anybody but those two again. It's ridiculous. I do wonder if Abu Dhabi, I mean, it could be a good race. You never know. But I wonder if it's not the best choice to have after what has been two disappointing races.
Well, you may find that you have to cope with it all by yourself. If I don't rally, if I don't make, you know, some kind of if I don't rise from the ashes to help you with my insight and intuition, you may find yourself doing Side Podcast and the Fact by Fact Box and the podcast and everything else all by your lonesome. And then that might make Abu Dhabi interesting.
Yeah, you ain't no thing but a chicken wing.